Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. I'm going to play an excerpt from a documentary about North Korea before my co-host joined the line. Please tune in. We're at the stage of the documentary where they're going to be interviewing some South Koreans about North Korean military intent, and then it's going to jump to his aspect over the DMZ zone. One moment, please.
It was very damaging for the regime. North Korea is a deeply Confucianist country where respect for one's elders, especially relatives, is ingrained. Murdering his own uncle was more likely to harm the people's loyalty to Kim Jong-un than consolidate his power. I think that the members of the elite who lose respect for their leader could also turn away from him. In order for his accession to power to succeed, Kim Jong-un decided to use terror to subdue the regime's old guard. He then concentrated all the key posts and surrounded himself with those loyal to him. I think that Kim Jong-un is in charge. I don't think that there are puppets behind him because I think the system is designed to only have one person in charge. And so and everybody must demonstrate their personal loyalty to him in order to survive. Million Koreans live in the city of Seoul, the capital of South Korea. 20 million people more obsessed with their own success than with Kim Jong-un. However, closer scrutiny reveals that the whole city is ready for war. The military's control over the city makes it an impregnable citadel. A vast underground network was conceived as a shelter from any attack by the North. People no longer notice the gas masks and the emergency rations provided in ever-dwindling numbers in the underground stations. I'm not worried about war. I've done my national service. Their nuclear capacity, on the other hand, that does worry me greatly.
I don't understand why he wants to develop nuclear weapons. To blackmail us? To threaten us, to get something out of us, or just for his own personal glory.
I'm not really afraid of war. Their nuclear threat seems to be their only survival mechanism.
The North Korean border is only 30 kilometers away. It's an impassable demilitarized zone, 2 kilometers across, with hundreds of thousands of soldiers either side of it. Seoul is well within range of cannon fire. The soldiers in the south can see villages in the north. Unlike his father, Kim Jong-un personally inspects the advanced posts, which are the greatest threat to Seoul.
The main difference that was felt in the early days of the Kim Jong-un era was that he seemed...
I'm going to cut to the show now. John and Don are on the line. The thing about North Korea is they possess a common heritage, and they also possess a very well-defined enemy. However, the DMZ was established by Western powers, and in a sense, I see Albert on the line too. In a sense, though, Russia has infiltrated the training and the military buildup in North Korea also. What some people aren't aware of is Switzerland, which is a neutral country, has educated all three of Kim Jong-il's children, which included Kim Jong-un, who went by the last name of C-A-K while he was being educated. So I'm briefly going to give you guys a two-minute introduction, making sure my volume's up. So Kim Jong-il was more of a steady leader. It was Kim Jong-un's father. He had several children, including Kim Jong-nam, who was in charge of the General Bureau of Data Processing and very entrenched in the regime. And he also had a second child who they considered weak but very well educated. Well, they chose Kim Jong-un because he was the son of Kim Jong-il's lover, Ko Yang-hee, who was a dancer, and that was his favorite woman. He chose him at a young age. However, Kim Jong-il died suddenly, all of a sudden, and Jong-un had to take over the throne right away, and he was not prepared. The first thing he did that upset people is he purged the regime by killing his uncle, named Jang Song-sik, T-H-A-E-K. He was killed at the age of 67 in December of 2013, and he also killed two close aides, Li Yang-ha and Jang Su-ki. The thing is that Jang Song-sik was a close relative of Kim Jong-il. He had married her sister. He studied in Moscow. He was integral to the regime, and he should not have been eliminated because he had a lot of knowledge on how to run the government. Jang Song-sik, the one who was executed, his daughter committed suicide in Paris because the parents didn't approve of her boyfriend. Now, I just want to jump to one other statement. Now, I just want to mention something kind of funny, too. Kim Jong-un loved basketball even at the age of 10 or 11. He found places in Switzerland to play, and he was pretty good at it. He was a well-rounded child. He didn't have tendencies of being hostile or narrow-minded until he got older. And also, I wanted to mention, because I played the documentary part where the South Koreans were being interviewed, South Korea has a gas masks and emergency foodstuffs locked in glass cases in their underground tunnels, the capital of South Korea, which is Seoul. So they're prepared for war against North Korea. They've been prepared for war for a while. And another thing I wanted to point out is parts of the DMZ zone are 160 miles long and 2.5 miles wide, and that just seems like a waste of land. But there are people who live in the DMZ, and they have special rules. The South Korean side, they have to go to bed by midnight and not come out of their house before 6 a.m. So they are under certain conditions. The reason I'm bringing this topic up tonight is because there's a summit with Donald Trump in June 12th in Southeast Asia, and it's an important part of keeping the peace in the world at this time. Good evening, Albert, Don, and John, in alphabetical order.
Hey.
You first, Albert.
Hi, hey. Albert. How was your... Hi, Don.
Well, I'm studying for the finals, called to the desert. School ends on the May the 25th, so we have our finals around May 15th, so we got
about 2 days, right?
Yeah, coming up pretty soon, so yeah, got to study.
Well, I want to pose a question, that, John, I know you're on the line somewhere too, right?
Oh, yes, I am here in full effect.
So the title of our show is called What is the Family of Nations? Does Donald Trump care about Koreans? And would anybody care about Koreans given the fact if they did not have nuclear arsenal? Like, we do have close ties with South Koreans on a business and religious level. There's South Korea's probably the biggest Christian nation in in the Asian area of the world, the eastern part of the world. But would Donald Trump care about Koreans if they were not leveraged for his power brokering? Anybody can go first. And secondly, the DMZ has been in effect since the end of the Korean War, which ended in the 50s, which was nearly 70 years ago. So do you think the Western world and the UN should still have strong control over that region? And if they didn't, would it be an all-out war between North and South Korea?
Well, I could tell you for sure before Donald Trump became a president, you know. His shows that he used to make, you know, his beauty pageants and everything, you know, when he used to talk with them. He never really talked about the North Korean people, the people in general, you know. They never really talked about them anyway. So, you know, I mean, if he never even mentioned a word of them before, then why, I mean, you know, and now he mentions a word of them, so, you know, now it's, you know, I mean, it's kind of, how you say.
Well, he's gone from calling Kim Jong-un Rocket Man to a legitimate negotiator in the world. So, John, I think you were going to say something.
Well, I was going to say, is that really fair or nice to Trump to say that? You're a president of the greatest superpower on the planet. And there's about five or six countries out there that are can be threatening to the rest of the world, whether it's China, Russia, places like even Great Britain or France have nuclear capability. So here you have a country who is practicing launching intercontinental ballistic missiles. They're practicing this. And you have a guy who basically, if you read about the people, they are controlled. The culture is controlled as to what they can read, what they can say. No books about love stories. No movies about the culture that we share freely across the world. And you have a guy who's basically just lining up to be able to shoot to Japan or South Korea or America. Wouldn't he have to be concerned about them? I mean, obviously.
I didn't mean it in a negative way. What I meant is for example, George W. Bush put North Korea as part of the Axis of Evil. I was just wondering, everybody knows about North Korean and Kim Jong-un's threat. So, of course, Trump was aware of them. But also they border Russia and China. And China contains 75% of the North Korean border. I guess the thing is they are in a strategic part in the world, and they're also a threat to Japan. But I guess I could have phrased it differently. You're correct.
Well, in other words, if he didn't do it or talk about it, people would say he doesn't care that the world's going to get blown up, or he's just this kind of disconnected person and kind of an old guy who just really has lost touch with the modern world. You have to look at all the rogue threats. So there's ISIS. You have to look at what the Russians are doing in Afghanistan, or you know what's going on in Iran. Whoever's got plutonium or uranium, whoever is putting together, they look through with the different devices they have to see who's building things, who's storing power, even seismic activity. So you just kind of have to. I mean, it's like if your neighbor next door is, you see them coming home every day and they're bringing supplies and building stuff that looks like they're going to launch a missile, you kind of go, I think I should be concerned about what they're doing.
Right, and my main reason for doing this show is a positive note. I'm hoping that some type of peaceful resolution can be achieved, and I'm glad that Trump and Kim Jong-un put their differences aside to look at the big picture. I also wanted to mention that Russia has had an established relationship with North Korea since 1946, and they helped establish the communist bloc. They only own 11 miles of border near Vladivostok, and China owns the rest of the northern border of Korea. They don't own it. I mean, they, you know, they're the.
I'd like to ask the panel, considering that Trump's been president, you know, like a year and a half, and considering this has been the current state is the result of the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years at least or more, do you think previous administration has been effective in stopping Kim Jong-un from doing what he's been doing? You know, would anyone like to voice their opinion? Like, what was done the last 8 years that was this really effective? If this guy is launching interballistic missiles and testing them until the mountain site that he was testing on collapsed from so much launches, does anyone think that was an effective strategy?
Hello, everybody.
I'll let Don go, and then I'll comment.
All right, well, because you can comment, this is, again, delusion and distraction. If you notice, the superpowers, quote-unquote, bullies, killers, evil dictators are all taking, you know, their place in the sand. They're digging in so they can get ready to start nuking each other or having war on each other's turf. This is something that the propensity of having all of these power-hungry dictators talking together, where our president, your president, cannot befriend anybody, any of the other leaders except from Norway, is indicative of what he is looking for as putting together a coalition of former enemies, communists. I've mentioned here many, many times that our president is effectively a communist, and he's made our country a communist country. So this is all a part of it. Everyone knows that China controls North Korea, and one of the ways that we can keep China in check is to befriend North Korea and put pressure on Xi Jinping. So, you know, he's playing a game, kind of a Russian roulette, and he's winning. He's got a gun with maybe one bullet. And the rest of the world is playing with five bullets in a six-chamber gun. So that's how he's working it. He's doing it very effectively, making everybody look like idiots. And, you know, he's essentially not against Assad, Bashar, in fact, with another evil dictator, Netanyahu. They're going into Syria and charging up their oil production. They're keeping us in the 19th century and the 18th century through oil production, disclaiming climate control and everything else that is overt and obvious. So we're just sitting here. You're just sitting here. I'm doing things about it. But you guys are just sitting here. And when I say you guys, I mean the rest of the country. Is sitting here watching him destroy everything. He's destroyed everything that is American, everything that's democratic, everything that's Republican. He's for the Republic. So he's destroying everything, and everybody, those people out there in America, just watching. Go ahead.
Bill Clinton was one president who did engage with Pyeongchang, but he did it through talking to Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. He sent her to North Korea in 2000, and it was a reconnaissance mission that had to do with missile tests, and he decided later that he didn't want to do that. Don, could you talk a minute? I'm having a disturbance at work. Okay, I gotta change rooms. Oh, and then
sure,
anyways,
sure,
George well. Bush, George W. Bush went on a meeting with a six-party country group. It was North Korea, the U.S., Russia, and a couple other countries, and they were going to establish what could be done about North Korean relations, but George W. Bush personally could not go there himself. He just had like a coordinated meeting with six different countries, which included North Korea. Unfortunately, I can't look up the other research now because of a work disturbance. So, John, were you thinking that? No, John, were you thinking that no president had ever tried to make contact with North Korea?
Well, actually, what I was saying is that I think they continued to develop nuclear weapons. They had a WPK Central Committee meeting on March 31st, 2013. That's 5 years ago. And so basically, they've been working on things for quite a while. And I'm just saying, he's gone to the point where he's launching stuff. It doesn't matter who's president. It doesn't matter if Jesus was president. Kim Jong-un has an agenda to, and he's a bit crazy about it. He's cavalier. He's a rogue. He is going to do what he's going to do. It doesn't matter who's president. It doesn't matter how you approach him. Obama has the greatest, favorability ratings among Americans and among, France and Europe. And over the last 5 years, this is gravitated to this level. We're just seeing the culmination. To get to the point where you can launch missiles, you don't do that in a couple months. You do that over years to develop the capability, the technology. And so I'm saying is, does anyone really think that's been effective? Do you think Donald Trump has actually put together this whole agenda for to blow up the whole world?
I don't think necessarily, but I have to answer another question first.
Hell yeah, he's trying to be best friends with Duterte in the Philippines. Every doggone dictator, he lets Putin screw him in the butt. You know, what do you think they're doing at Trump Tower? It's not just the women, it's Putin and him, getting down. So this is a real sad showing. He can't make friends with Macron. He can't make friends with May. He can't make friends with
the German leader.
The German. I'm having a brain freeze right this second. Who's her name? In Germany.
Right.
I'll get it. Angela Merkel. Angela Merkel.
He tried to make friends with Berlusconi because
it's not a bad thing, Don. It's not a bad thing that he's meeting with Kim Jong-un. You can't keep that country isolated for years on end. It's only going to result in more.
It is a bad thing, Jane, when the purpose. It's not a bad thing to have tax reform. It's not a bad thing to shake up the HHS or Medicare. It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. But it is a bad thing when you take from the poor and give to the rich, and that's what this is all about. You know, the Japan and North Korea, they have oil up there. It's all about oil. They're going into Syria for oil, nothing else. We're going into Africa for minerals and oil. We're staying active in Afghanistan for oil and minerals, rare earth. We're not doing this for a pleasure or peace.
Right, because he's a businessman and he's taking care of business. You want someone that's going to be friends and who's terrible in business. That's our Congress.
But he's destroying
the last 10 years.
Destroying people.
So in the last year and a half, we've suddenly destroyed the planet. No, we've been having gas and technology and industry for the last 50 years, right? This has been going on. This, we didn't just like a year and a half go, hey, let's start up cars.
But now we have more methane and carbon dioxide than we've ever got recorded, that we've ever had reported, ever.
And who's doing the production of all this stuff? I work at a store where everything's made in China. Do you think this is coming from the United States? Do you think this is going to stop? Just if we're nice guys and we have no industry, no money, no power, no army, no military, you think that's going to make the world a better place?
Better than what we've got now.
Don, can you put yourself on a pregnant pause for a minute? Okay. I have to.
He's meeting with the guy.
I want to tell you guys something important about the history that I couldn't finish because of an interruption on the main line here. Jimmy Carter visited Pyeongchang in 2010 and returned with another jailed American. Bill Clinton went in 2009 when Obama was in office on a mission to free two imprisoned U.S. journalists and used Pyeongchang as leverage to lure a significant American to the country. And Barack Obama refused to meet with the North Korean leader because he said that this is the same kind of pattern we saw with his father engaging and his grandfather before, that they have provocations that he can't accept. You don't get to bang a spoon on the table and somehow get your way. Now, Obama met with two other renegade leaders, Cuba's President Raul Castro, Fidel's brother, and Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. So he did travel to Cuba, and he spoke to the Iranian leader by phone.
Well,
like I said, two ex-presidents went there too, so I feel like there has been some kind of overtures.
Well, did you see what you said? He met with someone from a Muslim country. He met with someone from a communist country, and you know his education and how he grew up and what he favored. He favored socialism. He favored communism. He favored the Muslim. So, I mean, who's his dad? How was he raised by? So.
Think that's the reason, John. I think Iran was a country that nobody wanted to touch. Israel treated them badly. Obama wanted to make some kind of overture to them to eliminate their nuclear program in exchange for breaking some trade agreements and trying to get them to get some medical supplies into their country. He did it for foreign policy negotiations, not just because he spent a couple years of his life in Indonesia. I don't think that has any bearing on it.
And what did Iran say as far as their compliance with this treaty that was never ratified by Congress? It's never an official treaty that they agreed to. They agreed.
Are you talking about the Iran deal or Korea?
Iran, the leadership of Iran says we don't have to agree to this. We will do anything we need to defend ourselves, and they aren't in compliance with it. They basically, it was an agreement that never was voted on by Congress and ratified. It's just an Obama concept that everyone's been kind of going.
No, it wasn't. It was initiated in 2015 by five world powers. The U.S., the U.K., France, China, Russia, and Germany.
Well, that's rather interesting.
It came after years of tension over Iran's alleged efforts to develop a nuclear weapon. Then they decided to back down because they wanted the crippling economic sanctions to be lifted. They had two facilities, Natanz and Fordo, where uranium hexafluoride got fed into centrifuges to separate and blah, blah, blah. Anyways, they had agreed to inspections and breakdowns of that material in order to get some stuff imported into their country.
Well, in 2015, the Obama administration said the Iran deal wasn't even a signed document. They didn't sign anything.
Well, it was an international agreement, though, but I'm not fully prepared to talk about that tonight.
It was kind of a gentleman's agreement, like, we're going to do this, but this wasn't, again, this wasn't something that they all signed, and it was just kind of like, yeah, we're going to do this, and basically, Iran hasn't agreed to do anything. They will do whatever they want to do, and he sent over $1.5 billion.
I'm not sure if you read that a year ago or within the last week, but Well, what I'm trying to say is something has been done, and Iran has received sanctions. They had a. Can I just read two sentences, and then you can restate your position? Iran had a large stockpile of enriched uranium, almost 20,000 centrifuges. That was enough to create 8 to 10 bombs, according to research during the Obama administration. His administration said that Iran would move key elements in order to create a bomb, and they would take out certain elements. In other words, it disabled their program. And there were other instances. There was the UN and other people overseeing this.
Yeah,
so
but
the international,
I think about 20,000 nuclear bombs.
No, they could make 10 bombs from 20,000 centrifuges. Which is a centrifuge is like a processing area of uranium. It almost sounds like something cylinder-like.
Yeah, but that's double standards because, I mean, the U.S. has a lot. I mean, it's the second country with the most amount of nuclear bombs or bombs in period, you know. I mean, when you talk about non-nuclear
bombs. Well, we do.
Bombs,
but if Iran violated any part of the agreement, the UN sanctions would automatically snap back into place for 10 years with the possibility of a 5-year extension. In other words, anything they were going to get out of it, if they recoiled, there was going to be even more severe sanctions.
Yeah, but here's
and the
thing.
Also,
I mean, the U.S. giving, you know, sanctions to, like, Iran and then, you know, and also North Korea for, you know, for trying to develop nuclear bombs or whatever, stuff like that, right? But then again, the U.S. has given nuclear bombs to Turkey, right? Because Turkey's holding some of the U.S. nuclear bombs because it's a very good ally of the U.S. So if you're ally of the U.S., you get some nuclear bombs, you get hook up some nuclear bombs. But if you're not an ally, you can't even build them in the first place.
Well, also, did you guys know that Iran was banned from exporting oil to certain countries, and sanctions previously imposed by the UN and EU and all those other places crippled its economy? With the new Iranian deal, Iran gained access to more than $100 billion in frozen assets overseas and was able to resume selling oil on international markets, which I think one reason China and Iran hooked up in certain ways was because Iran was selling oil to China. So it might not be a good deal for the U.S., but they were crippled for years.
Don,
I'm not going to cut you off again, but I felt like you were saying... Go ahead, Albert.
Well, Iran and China, you know, once formed the BRICS ally forces, you know, which BRICS, which means there's Russia, Iran, China, and then there's South Africa, and I can't remember the other. Oh, India. India, they form an alliance group, you know, which is BRICS. Because, you know, there's NATO, right? NATO, it's like 30 countries in NATO. You know, America, England, whatnot. But, yeah, so, you know, BRICS was formed and vice versa, yeah.
Okay. Don, I do have a question. Don, exactly damage were you discussing before I cut you off?
Well, I didn't know you cut me off, but that's all right.
I didn't really cut you off. I just felt like you were going in a direction that was was pulling away from foreign policy initiatives.
Okay.
Like, are you saying Donald Trump is incapable of forging any foreign policy negotiations that's effective in the world because of his estrangement from Theresa May and Angela Merkel?
Let me see. Yes. So, for the most part, we've got a situation where, you know, there are lies everywhere. The soybean situation is where, you know, we don't have wheat. The Chinese don't sell us soybeans. We give them the soybeans or ship them over, and they package that soy, and then they send it back. So that's why when you saw the news the other day about the fact that soy was no longer being purchased from China, it hardly had been. So, you know, there are a lot of things that people don't understand. NAFTA is something that we went and we made the arrangements to put NAFTA together to comply to what we wanted.
Do you have a cold or something?
That was just, you know, democratic policies. And next thing we know, we're getting NAFTA. It sounds like NAFTA was the worst deal that could have ever been set by trade.
Well, we did cover that in another show.
Who we deal with our allies. That's the reason. You know, we've been sending jobs back and forth across the border since
America. Don, your phone's cutting in and out. Don, your phone's cutting in and out. Don, your phone is cutting in and out.
Coming over and taking our job. They've been giving them our jobs ever since, you know, the Mexican-American War. This is ridiculous. It's a lie in front of everybody's face, and our foreign policy is being affected by it because it is affecting everybody who had been doing business with us at one point or another, and now they're turning negative toward us. We're going to have a whole lot more difficulty trying to deal with Brexit when it's time to hit us and what we're supposed to do with trade. He's talking about putting trade sanctions on Europeans who do business with Iranians. Now, if you can accept that, and everybody in America, the business community can accept that, go for it, because I don't mind seeing a depression or part of the economic infrastructure fail a little bit, because we actually do need an economic reset. So that's what I'm
okay,
talking about.
Okay, Don, I have to put you. Don,
you know,
can everybody, I muted Don. Don, we're having a hard time hearing you. Your phone's fading in and out. Can you hang up and call back in? Don, can you hang up and call back in? Your phone is fading in and out.
Okay. Well, is this better? Or?
That's better.
Sure. Yeah, no.
Okay,
I have a
question for John and then Albert. John, I understand what Don was trying to say about NAFTA and stuff, that he's alienating our most geographically close allies. And what people don't know is Canada is the one benefiting the most from NAFTA. Most of their stuff gets imported for free, a lot of it. And we have a lot of deals with Canada, especially on natural resources like metals and processing of wood and timber. But, John, what was your reaction to what Don said? And then, Albert, I have a question for you after John.
I think most people, at least in the high-cated ranks, don't like the way Donald Trump does things because it's not politically correct. And I think it really does – he's a results person. So that's really – people don't care about results. They just care about niceness. I'll give you an example. In a store, if a person walks out and steals something, you cannot stop them. You can say, hey, please don't do that. Don't take whatever. And that person just keeps walking. If you stand in front of them, they just keep walking. If you grab them, now you have an assault. If someone films it with a cell phone, it goes on the news. You basically attack that person. And, in fact, you're the one who gets arrested. You're the one who gets reported. I was telling someone, you know, in my father's day, you grab that person, you give them to security, they work them over, they call the police. The police go, oh, I see you have a black eye. You must have fell down. Here, let me help you. And then they beat them up a little bit or, you know, threaten them. And that person never comes back. You know, is that right? Is that wrong? I don't know. But I'm just saying, nowadays, kids and do whatever they want, thieves do whatever they want. And literally, people just walk in and walk out of stores with stuff. No one says a thing. You can't. You just wave. And so the question is, do you deal with dictators and bullies with toughness, or do you be their best friend and buddy and smile with them while they continue making their bombs and assembling their, you know, their game? I'm of the opinion to not be their best friend, but, you know, that's just how I see it playing myself.
By Donald Trump making a overture to meet with Kim Jong-un, how do you perceive that?
Well, he is actually meeting with them, and this is after calling him Rocket Man, after saying that if he does try to attack us, he will, you know, basically see, you know, I forget the exact words, but, you know, a fury, you know, a retaliation that's never been seen on the planet. You know, basically he said he'd blow him off the face of the earth. So, and people thought that was going to be the end of the world, and here he is, he's meeting with them. So I don't know. I think the tough approach seems to work with some of these people. Now, you know, maybe Trump will blow up the whole world, but I think he gets results. You know, I mean, when we're talking about not caring about the poor, the most women employed in the last 20 years, the most African-American population employed in the last 20 years. So when you say he doesn't care about the poor, does it really matter if the results, you know, are there for him that he's helping, as compared to people don't like the way he talks?
Okay,
with women,
exploiting
women, he's having sex with women. Look at everyone he's appointing in his cabinet. They're all, you know, his secretary is a female. You know, he's trying to make a female CIA director. Again, how can you say he's not helping women if he's only hiring women?
I can agree on some level. I do have some comments to make about the potential CIA director, but I have a question for Albert. Being that the inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, have access to Iranian nuclear plants 24/7, they're the global nuclear watchdog. Do you agree with John by saying that Iran is still a threat when they have a cooperative international agreement versus Korea, who wouldn't let us near their stuff, at least at this point?
Well, I mean, the inspectors have to be coming from somewhere, are they? Those inspectors, are they coming from the U.S.? I mean, who are
no,
they working
for? They're called the International Atomic Energy Agency. They're probably overseered by the U.N. on some level. But up
all
until
right,
2030, Iran has 24. They have full access to Iranian nuclear facilities, which are scattered throughout the country. There's about 7 of them, and they all produce different things.
Yeah, so they're overseen by the U.N., which is primarily controlled by the NATO allies. So, you know, the inspectors are probably going to be like, you know, from the United States or from, you know, from other NATO allies or whatever, you know what I mean? It could be from England, or maybe they'll get some people.
But there
from,
is a ban on their production of ballistic missile technology, uranium-induced weapons. So what I'm trying to say is, here's Iran that people like John view as an absolute threat, yet they're cooperating with an international agreement. Does this put Iran in a stage where they're more compliant than North Koreans, who just say they're going to do away with their program within 2 weeks before the meeting in the Philippines? Or wherever him and Trump are meeting in two weeks.
Where the inspectors are coming from, but you know, from their word and from, you know, but anyways, we had the UN inspectors before, and look what happened to Saddam Hussein, right? And Saddam Hussein didn't have any nuclear weapons or anything whatsoever, but still, you know, there had to be a reason to take him out. You know what I mean? And now we took up Gaddafi out of Libya. And so with Gaddafi and Saddam down, both dictators down, you know, big dictators, by the way, you know, I mean, you can see Iran, you know, they're kind of looking for ways to kind of be sneaky, maybe, to, you know, continue working on their nuclear technology, maybe be sneaky about it. But I would understand them so because...
The body that I just mentioned, the AE, the Atomic Energy Agency, has full access there. And by the way, Iran doesn't just produce, they don't just produce things at these plants for weaponry. They also use radio slopes and other things for medicines, agriculture, industry, and science. So the 1,044 uranium-enriched centrifuges that they've have to reduce now are for other purposes, not just military.
Right, right. But
all I'm trying to say is that I was just seeing if you, Don, I was basically seeing if Don, John, and Albert, any of you guys only perceive countries as, what I'm trying to get it as, do you see Iran as inherently evil with evil intentions? The way that some Americans do, like, can anyone give them the benefit of the doubt?
Well, I believe that Iran is one of the largest sponsors of terrorism, actually, in the world. Their human rights, they're definitely not. I would not say that they are helping free society. They basically. They sponsor, you know, extremist groups, whether it's Iraq, Lebanon, Yemen, Bahrain. They have no problem taking, you know, Americans hostages. They brutally repress their people. From what I understand, they've test launched at least 16 ballistic missiles since the JCPOA agreement was reached. It's a temporary thing, or in other words, after a 10 to 15 year period, they basically can continue on. It's a hold. It's not a permanent thing. They have 24 days they can delay inspections. It's not a anywhere, anytime. You know, they have to schedule when to inspect, and Iran can delay it up to 24 days. Well, that's not. You know, normally surprise inspections is how you do things. That's how you find stuff, right? If you know that someone's going to inspect your house at a certain day, a certain time, you're not going to leave stuff around. You have to be able to go in unannounced whenever you want to catch a cheater.
You mentioned, so Iran brutally suppressed their people, right? And so the U.S. is really pushing on that. And that's a lot of talking points in the mainstream media, you know, about Iran and the other stuff you mentioned. But, I mean, if you compare to Iran, compared to Saudi Arabia, which is a big ally of the U.S., and U.S., you never really talk bad, but in 2015, it was average upon basically every other day, the government basically, the police, you know, the general police, whatever they're called, but basically the government was chopping people's heads off. And on average, on every other day, you know what I mean? So, you know, compared to, you know, Saudi Arabia, compared to Iran, Iran's basically like an angel compared to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is terrible. You know, it's a lot more worse. You know what I mean?
The U.S. seems to have double standards for Saudi Arabia and Iran.
Well, unlike North Korea, where we've never had a foothold or control over their leadership, in the Middle East, Britain ruled in Iran and Iraq, and they handpicked their presidents for a number of years, including King Faisal in Iraq, and they bullied, what's-his-face, the only democratic Iranian president ever elected. Anyways, I'll get his name in a minute. Anyways,
Bashar.
The president of Iraq. What?
The Shah of Iran? I don't know his name.
No, it wasn't the Shah. They didn't. It was the guy who came before him that Ben Affleck made the movie about. Let me finish my thought. So just so you guys know, in Iran, they do have, I wouldn't say democratically elected, but they're popularly elected presidents. It's a vote. And they can only serve 8 years like us. And this Hassan Rouhani seems more civil than the last guy, Ahmadinejad. And he has allowed certain laxes in social customs that have, made things better. But recently they did have some civil strife there. So,
well, you know,
I will try to find the name of the what?
You know they're under Sharia law. So you know that how they
handle...
Yes,
it's a theocracy.
Right. So women's, example, a testimony of a male is equivalent to two females. A woman needs her husband's permission to work outside of the home or leave the country. They can stone you, they can kill you, they can hang you, they can behead you. decapitation, amputation, flagellation, I don't even know what that is. Whether it's adultery, alcohol consumption, burglary or petty theft, homosexuality, all these things can get you death, hanging, stoning, or decapitation. This is the kind of government, it sounds like you're kind of defending them as a really great place to go visit.
I wasn't defending them. What I said is that the Europeans had a stronghold. The French controlled Syria, the British controlled Iran and Iraq, and it was the U.S. CIA and the U.K. secret intelligence that overthrew Mohammed Mossadegh in 1953 after he became the first democracy in Iran, and he attempted to nationalize the Iranian oil. British Petroleum got pissed off, and they put him under house arrest until his death. And then America reestablished the monarchy there with Reza Pahlavi, and then it was the Shah of Iran later that Don was talking about. So the reason
again,
I bring it up is because I'm trying to confirm what Albert said, that the Europeans have a stronghold in certain areas.
So if, example, Albert being an atheist, and you, Jane, being a female, were to host the show to go live in Tehran, Iran, today, right now, live, and they knew where you were broadcasting your show, and especially me, and, of course, be a Christian criticizing the government, what would they do to us if they heard this?
I'll let
aired?
You know in a minute. We have a guest caller, I think, from the St. Louis area.
They would arrest all of
them. Of course.
Hi, this is Jane from Blog Talk Radio. Is this a guest caller?
Yes, I want to make a comment.
Sure.
I heard you making reference to some of these countries like Iran and that holding people as hostage and so forth, as if it's a terrible thing. But you have other countries that
I didn't make the exact reference my co-host did.
Well, I'm not saying USA hurt someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Australia, Singapore, Switzerland, UK, Malaysia, and
the U.S. has the highest prison population of all combined.
Well, yeah, but those prisoners were put in by way of due process. But the United States, with the passing of the signing of the Patriot Act by Obama in 2011, allowed you to take a United States citizen and detain them indefinitely, just like these other countries that was being mentioned. Myself, I think that these countries that's in pursuit of a form of protection, a deterrent to prevent from being attacked and invaded, they should be privileged with that ability to do so. After all, we have seen where countries have been invaded on frivolous reasons, you know, Iraq. And by the way, I was a supporter of Donald Trump, and I voted for him. I'm African-American male. One of 13% of those who voted did vote for Donald Trump. But that don't mean I agree with everything that he does.
I think you called the show once last summer.
Well, you got a better memory than I do.
When you said you were talking about Kerry, Missouri as a conceal and carry state, and you went to a Donald Trump rally carrying a gun. Are you the same person?
No, I didn't go to Donald Trump's rally carrying a gun, but there were people there who was expressing their Second Amendment right of open carry. But no,
I do like what you said. Are you trying to say that each nation has the right to detain people they want, or are you trying to say that the United States is unfair in its Patriot Act policy?
Well, I'm saying that the people point fingers at other countries in the United States does the same thing. You just have to understand and know how to recognize it. And I still contend that nations have a right to defend themselves. It's just like you defending your castle, your home. Some people feel that ADT, we have a burglar alarm sign, is sufficient on their front yard. Somebody may need a 22. Somebody may need a 12-gauge shotgun or AR-15. It depends on what. I think that the people on the southern border, those states that want a wall, well, they feel comfortable with having a wall to deter people from crossing over into the country. So that's just my opinion on the topic.
Right. I do, you know, I agree with 70% of what you said, but I do think it's wrong for us to have held some of those people who were possible suspects in Guantanamo Bay for years on end, never charging them, and then they just died in custody. From a human rights standpoint, I thought that was unfair.
Well, I can agree with you on that. Now, that was before the Patriot Act, too. That's been going on for a long time. But, you know, there's things that go on.
It was after 9/11, yes.
Yeah, there's things that go on that is that's void of public opinion because the public never have opportunity to know what it is. They're concentrated on other things. But
they just plain don't follow it. But
well,
John,
we can just
why
say
don't you make a comment
dumb.
Since I cut you off?
Well, I was going to say, according to Human Rights Group, Iran is the largest executioner of juvenile offenders. I think, wasn't it the guy who wrote the Satanic Chronicles or the, I'm trying to think of the title of his book, that basically put a death warrant on him. Again, I hear just a lot of from people, like, if you talk to people who escaped Iran, who are in America, they have a very different viewpoint of life over there. And it's cool if you are a Muslim, but if you're not, if you're a Christian and you live in Iran and you actively practice your faith, I can tell you it's far different than a Muslim practicing their faith in America.
Why would you go from Iran all the way across to the other side of the world to the United States? I mean, there's other countries.
They had to escape so they wouldn't get killed or imprisoned. That's why.
Countries too, but you're particularly talking about
people that went to America and, you know, and then talked to the mainstream media, and then they, you know, they said Iran was bad.
Because I was talking to women in a store that came from there because they didn't like being treated like slaves, because if their husband didn't like them, he could beat the crap out of them. And if they, you know, basically they could kill them for many different reasons. They like being free here in America. So, yeah, I just find that we celebrate freedom. We want to talk about freedom. But then when we go to great lengths, some people go to great lengths to defend countries that want to suppress freedom and kill you for it.
America,
the U.S.
Iran
defends countries that are doing even worse than Iran. Like I said before, Saudi Arabia, that then, you know, demonizes Iran, you know what I mean? So it has double standards. The U.S. government does have double standards. You got to remember that.
Yeah, and Singapore will publicly tan you. Iran will execute you if you're on the down low in your merit. So there's always two sides to it. So United States, not too long ago, within our lifetime, used to execute juveniles.
Right. Well, is Saudi Arabia or Singapore, are they building nukes, and are they anti-American?
Yeah.
Well,
and yeah.
America can have any friends it wants as long as it's willing to pay for them.
Right.
All right. Now, everybody's making salient points right now. Thank you, Albert, for bringing up Saudi Arabia. That's one of the countries that I forgot. Of course, as I said, I am almost certain, we here in Nevada are almost certain that the Shah, that the Prince of Saudi Arabia who was here was meant to be the target of the Highway 57, the concert that we had here in Las Vegas. So that was shot up. That was a diversion to assassinate the Prince. But now that he's back, he's another person who is a friend of your illustrious president. But for the most part, we're talking about, yes, the caller is correct in that it is the same principle, protecting their borders, et cetera, as it is with us. Iran is part of the non-immigration countries, set of countries. So they right now, if they tried to come in, it would be very difficult. It's not impossible, except for money. But we're talking about the same thing is going on with other countries in just in different ways. Female mutilations, birth control by China mandating one child until recently, 1.5 children until recently. We're talking about birth control here as voluntary, but involuntary in the fact that the food companies and drug companies, pharmaceutical companies, know that the thing that they include in their ingredients are going to impede women's birth. So these are something that they're the same thing, only in different clothing.
Yeah, another thing, look how a 12-year-old can go get the morning after pill without letting their parents know. And look how Hillary Clinton would hold a carrot in front of countries, especially African countries, and said if you want the carrot, you have to open up your society to same-sex marriage and also abortion on demand.
You know,
exactly.
I think it was Missouri itself that just the state legislature just voted to ban all abortions. And one of those central Midwestern states just made a new rule that parents had to be consulted if the child was under 16 or 17. I'll have to look
right.
that up while you guys are talking.
I believe Texas is trying to exclusively ban.
Well, definitely Texas, but now another Midwestern state chimed in on that.
Iowa is giving six weeks, where you basically hear the heartbeat. Once that is attained, you cannot abort.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm gonna let
right.
you guys go, but
it
I just want to say
Iowa,
this one
it
thing.
It wasn't Missouri. Yes.
If the founding fathers who authored the Constitution of the United States had the ability to have a far-reaching foresight into the future, our present Constitution would be as thick as a Webster dictionary. You guys have a pleasant day.
Well, that's the whole point, sir, is that the Constitution itself...
Are you hanging up, St. Louis?
Well, I could put myself on mute and continue to listen.
All right, well, I just wanted to make
this comment. Well, we want you to keep talking unless you're not interested.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I can add some contribution to the conversation. I'll just hang on.
He will in a moment. I just wanted to mention that you just mentioned the Constitution and our founding fathers. Fuck a founding father. The fact is that there was only men. I'm working here. I worked with about 15 people to bring the ERA to our as a law in our state and here in Nevada. And for the most part, we have two more states to go. Founding fathers had a short sight, and they were not meant to accommodate the 345 million that are here now. So we actually do have thicker books than whatever book you just said. We have volumes and volumes of laws, each state unique to each other. And this is too onerous to have a man in the, you know, to have any one person define what all of that is written.
Let me say something real quick.
Albert talk, please.
Yeah, I want to say something real quick to our founding fathers. The very same people that wrote that all men are created equal were also slave owners.
No, not John Jay and some of the people who wrote the Federalist Papers were not slave owners.
Well, not all of
them.
You're
thinking of certain presidents.
I'm not trying to say all of them, but some of the people at the house that were there during the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, you know, slavery
because
was a practice that had...
Because most of the men who wrote the... James Madison, John Jay, and the other guy who wrote the Federalist Papers, they were Northerners, and they did not own slaves. But you do have a point, and we're pretty familiar with that aspect of American history.
Right.
And Congress would come along and try to make up for what they perceived as be sort of immoral, coming after the Dred Scott case with the ruling that Justice Taney posed. They came through with the enactment of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Right, which has to do with equal protection, right?
It has to do with equal protection and also has to do with rights of a newborn. And I don't think that those rights was to be extended to illegal immigrants, but they take advantage of it.
Well, part of it is, you know, the adaptation of the times. Like, within the last 60 years, there's been more immigrants coming in this country, especially from south of the border. And it's a conditional measure of society and economic inequity. It's not, they don't necessarily want to come here. Some of them come out of survival.
Well, with as much money as the United States giving aid to countries south of the border in order for them to try to address some of the problems that lead to people want to unstake and run away, they should take care of those problems themselves. Those should not be our problems. America has enough problems as it is, I would say.
You're
and also,
right. People come here
why
for
shouldn't
convenience.
They go, why shouldn't they go to Brazil? Brazil ranks in the top 10 countries with a very substantial GDP in the world, and it's more conducive to their culture.
I agree on some levels. I did want to clarify one thing before you guys continued. It was Iowa, as Don said, that tried. They're trying to put a bill for it that makes having an abortion after 6 weeks illegal. The problem is that two other states, North Dakota and Arkansas, tried that, and they were shut down by their state Supreme Court. Most states want to keep it at 24 weeks. But now that you brought up the 14th Amendment, I want to read just one brief section. All persons born or naturalized in the U.S. and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the U.S. and the state where they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunity of citizens of the U.S., nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction equal protection of the laws. Now, our friend Ben brought up something a few weeks ago that two illegal citizens in Southern California got elected to local office, and nobody raised a fuss about it. And I'm not sure what county it was or what part of the state, but it happened. John, did you want to weigh in on this? Yeah, I can look it up while John's talking.
Yeah, I think that politics, no matter what you, how you view it, whether you're Republican, Democrat, or whatever faith you are, I think everyone's going to have their opinion of what's right or what's the best. What I like about America is I have the freedom to believe what I want. And countries that don't interfere with that ability of me to, or that will work with us and let us do our thing and they can do their thing, I think that's a good thing. In countries that aren't favorable to that, those are the countries you got to keep an eye on. So I may not agree with what they do with Saudi Arabia, but again, they're not coming down over here and threatening my lifestyle. Now, they may be sponsoring some groups that do. So that's something we should check out. But basically, I don't
9/11 was Saudi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think that politics, you can solve the world's problems. I think you're going to have to choose personally for yourself how you want to live. To me, I would rather live in America. Did some of the founding fathers own slaves? Sure. Did we have a constitution, though, that we could enforce and actually give freedom and actually try to make adjustments? Yes, we have a document to do that. That's the beauty of it. And you go to other systems, and you don't have that same kind of flexibility. So, I don't know. I'm very happy with the country I'm at, and I'm at peace with my God. And I don't think that there's, these situations, they're always just going to be like people that are Democratic. They hate Trump, and they think it's the end of the world. There's nothing I can do to change their mind. And, Trump has his flaws. But the point is, I'm not a liberal person. And I don't see the world that way. And it's okay. I just pray to God that I have my freedom and, that people can defend their freedom. And I don't own a gun, but I'm glad that there are people that do. And so I'm at peace with that. I know a lot of friends on social media. They just, the minute you talk politics, they're just going to go into their rant of what they believe. And there's no changing them. They thought that way for 50 years. And nothing's going to change it. And that's okay. And that's just the way the world rolls, I think.
By the way, those two people who were elected, it was just a Huntington Park, California commission. They were elected to two different boards. One was Parks and Recs, and one was Health and Education. So it wasn't consequential.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are not elected officials.
Yeah, they're appointed. They were appointed. Ben had it wrong.
Human systems are going to have flaws because humans are flawed people. So the only thing that would be perfect is God ruling, and God has left us alone to our devices. And I do believe in an Armageddon. I do believe in the end of the world. I believe in an afterlife. And even if you had things.
So you think Iran is a good country because it's ruled by a theocracy?
Well, no, because, they're Muslim. So the bottom line is, you're going to die. Are you going to go to heaven? Are you going to die in your sins? what pays for sins. I believe Christ was the payment for her sins. Now, if you don't believe that, then I'm an idiot. You know, then basically you're not going to accept what I have. When I die, I'll find out if I'm right. You know, and if I'm right, there's heaven and eternity. And if I'm wrong, I mean, if this other person of counter faith is wrong, they burn in eternity. I mean, they're separated from God. I hope they're, you know, that they're okay. But I will stick to my guns.
The Muslims do believe Jesus was a prophet. He's one of the five major prophets.
Right, and
so
Jesus.
They don't deny him. They might deny him in his full deity, but I think this topic tonight is on comparative politics, and I don't want to get too heavy into religion.
Well, I'd like to make a quick note on what John said about changing people's minds. I mean, it is extremely hard to change somebody's mind indirectly when you're telling somebody that they're wrong and this is correct and this is how it should be. If you're trying to speak to them directly, it's really hard to do it to change somebody's mind. But indirectly, subconsciously, through video or poetry or movie, you know what I mean, or in a letter that you write, you can you have a better chance of changing somebody's mind subconsciously, in rather than directly.
I have a question that goes in line with that. When I was watching the documentary on North Korea and when Kim Jong-il died, people were like falling down and sobbing in the streets. Like the entire scope of their whole government rested on one person. Now, let's just say Kim Jong-un was shot suddenly by a disloyal member of society one day. Would their whole John and Albert, would their whole society fall apart if he was suddenly taken from them, or would he just be replaced with a similar like character that they could equally worship?
If you saw, you didn't saw free people. Now, of course, you know, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the U.S. government. I don't like them, but I also don't like the North Korean government or Kim Jong-un either. You know, those people in those videos, and I remember seeing that video too when everybody's crying and they're all, you know, the people are all over. But that really showed you how scared they were and how willing they were to kiss Kim Jong-un's ass and kiss his butt. And, you
but
know,
they,
very,
it seemed like some of those people really loved the dad. They loved him with all their heart, soul, and being. Kim Jong-il, I'm talking about, who died in 2013.
Again, North Korean.
Jane, do you understand that their daily routine over in North Korea is extremely rigid in most of the
countries. They have to sing about their, you know, their dictator, North Korean. They have pictures of Kim Jong-un and his father and their bedrooms, like in everybody's bedroom, they got pictures of them, you know? I mean, shit, I don't have a picture of Barack Obama or Donald Trump in my bedroom. Hell no.
Yeah, and you don't have and you don't have your brother or your son killing uncles and you know, brothers and everybody else around them. You don't do that very often.
When I worked in Virginia in public housing, everybody had pictures on their wall of JFK, RFK, and Martin Luther King. Sometimes all three of them were painted together in the same picture.
The difference is the government there is, you know, controls what is through Kim Jong-un, controls what you're supposed to think, what you're supposed to say, and that, you know, he's to be revered. He's to, you know, I mean, they practically pray to him. And so any counter criticism is eliminated. You grow up with it. It's like if you found out, if you told me my dad was a murderer and he raped women and he was a drug dealer, I would go, I never knew he went to work every day. He was a hardworking Christian man. I would still, all I know is that he took care of me and he was, you know, a great man. And he gave me, you know, all my morality, my just principles to live life. So if you were to take out Kim Jong-un, the problem you would have is half the people, that's their whole life. That's their whole basis of society, of family, of everything, of every information they have. So they would be lost, and someone would seize power, and then you would have probably someone that's traditional would rise representing the old guard, and you would have this conflict, you know, whether it's in China, whether it's in Cuba or Iraq, wherever. You take out the strong man, someone else comes in, and then there's a struggle, you know, between, you know, the left and right, or, you know, whatever the parties are. And you see that especially with ISIS, the Taliban, and, you know, Hamas, and all these different groups that rise up out of chaos. So, that would
and
happen.
And all around the world, repeatedly, those are from U.S.-based, I don't want to say failed wars, the wars that really don't have a winner or a loser. That's when the U.S. goes in and then they pull out because of whatever reason, and that leads to that. Now, almost every one of those cases you just mentioned.
Well, in our country, every president is disposal practically before he even takes office. Like, we make our presidents disposable.
It's true. Yeah. And each president walks in usually with the conflict, and then he's got to either extend it, end it, or come up with another solution. You know, it's just like with any problem you have, your parents gave it to you, and, you know, I didn't create taxes, I didn't create death, I didn't create pollution, but I can continue it, or I can try to change it, but even then I can't change it. But I looked at my car yesterday. You know, the last time I put gas into my car was December 18th, 2017. So almost 5 months in a couple of days since I put gas into my car, because I write it down. And the reason why? Because I ride my bicycle everywhere. And I still have a third of a tank left. So probably in September or so, I will contribute to the American consumption of gasoline. But I can guarantee you, I'm sure all of us are going to fill up a gas tank this week or this month several times, and we're going to complain it's Trump polluting the world. No, it's us polluting the world. We choose it. And did Trump choose these problems? They were here before. He just has an approach to how he's going to deal with it, and people don't like it. But he's dealing with it.
So why do you always have to indirectly throw Trump's name into everything?
Because
go ahead, Albert.
That's what you start talking
about. I didn't get a chance a while ago, and I wanted to go into the subject what John was talking about when John said, what about if the, Iran government would listen to our conversation, what would they do to us, right? Well, here's the question. So what about if you went to, Ted Bush, right? Dad's new grave, right? Like, just say he died or whatever. He's got a grave, whatever, right there, right? So let's just say you went to his grave and you pissed right on his grave, and they caught you on video like doing that, you know, it's an eye in the mainstream media, and what would they think they would do to you? And then let me add this to that, because during the 2016 election, when Ted Bush, of course George Bush's brother, right, Ted Bush, he was running for president. During one of his interviews, he was talking about his dad, and he said, oh, yeah, I'd do anything for my dad. I love my dad. I didn't kill for my dad. Yeah. He accidentally said that during his interview, by the way. You can even look that up. See, it's still up. I don't even know if it's been deleted or not. But I saw that for sure, 100%, anyways, on video. On the mainstream, you know, which I do watch once in a while. But anyways, so what would you think they'd do to you if you pissed on one of the ex-president's graves, and they saw it, and you saw that all over, and you were all over the video. Not like the people, whatever, but the main family of the government themselves.
Well, actually, if I went out on my street corner and peed in public, I would get arrested. It's against the law to urinate in public, although people do it all the time. Free speech is not against the law in America, but you cannot go out the street corner, pull out your wee-wee, and start whizzing.
But think about it. Okay, look, think about it. Okay, Donald Trump is a prophet.
I don't see your point.
If you piss on Donald Trump's dad's grave, what would you think Donald Trump would do to you? He's a very powerful person. He can kill you without anybody even know that he had any connections. So would you think he'll do it, or you think he'll just be, okay, that's cool, let him do whatever he wants?
I think he would have you arrested. I don't think he would have you executed. Maybe, I don't know. Would any president endorse that? Would any human endorse that?
Technically, he could if he wanted to without anybody knowing.
Well, you're creating a hypothetical that Donald Trump kills people who urinate on their parents' graves. Is that really a good hypothetical to go with?
Well, so you think you can piss on Donald Trump's grave and then he'll have you arrested and you'll be out tomorrow and nothing will happen to you, right?
I think if I peed on JFK's grave, Martin Luther's grave, Abraham Lincoln's, whoever's grave,
why are you
going
to piss on Donald Trump at the golf course?
And then take his nine iron
and chuck his ball in the woods.
If you pissed on anyone's grave or in public again, a cop will arrest you. A human will report you and have you arrested. Although, you know, if I had to go somewhere, I've been with women who have said, oh, just pull over here. They've gone out into an alley and peed. Or they've been walking their dog and like, okay,
Jesus.
Don't look. Go to the tree.
Let me put it this way, okay? You saw the documentary during the 2016 election was made by Michael Moores. The documentary is called the Trump Land, something, something, something Trump Land by Michael Moores. And where he literally jokes about how many people that, you know, they work with Hillary Clinton and died. And it was like 40 people. But anyways. Stating that Hillary Clinton was some kind of, you know, having people killed as a joke, that it was the true fact that he was showing it. A lot of the Secret Service and other people that work for Hillary Clinton were assassinated or killed, but somehow had nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. So even though, yeah.
Stormy Davis or Daniels or whatever, it's been bothering Trump for years, and she didn't disappear. So I don't think he would kill anyone. I think he's too busy running his empires and making money and manipulating. Maybe he has other people do his dirty business.
You can talk smack about Donald Trump. That would not affect you at all. I mean, you could talk a lot of shit about him, but once you piss on his dad's grave, now that would be personal, really personal. In fact, Donald Trump has even said in his interview that he loves his dad a lot. He's a big admirer of his father. He loves his father very much. You know, he thinks his father is very handsome, by the way, too. He said that, too. Yeah. And so I think that would be a very, very, for you to even get access to his even grave. I mean, to get access to
okay,
even go to his grave would be hard to get to in the first place, but...
We just passed the 90-minute mark, and we're getting into the territory of Travis Rankin, who crossed the line at the White House, the one who did the Waffle House shooting. So, I think it's time to do our conclusions. I'm not interested in stalking Donald Trump.
Oh, but I was. I mean, you have all these celebrities talking about killing him, beheading him, assassinating him in his videos. I think those are the people that are, you know, Madonna's talking about blowing up the White House, right? Katy Perry, you know, blowing things up. You know, when you start talking about that type of language, it's not the, you know, the warmonger Trump. It's these peace-loving, you know, women of the world that are doing it, right? Am I not right?
I don't think Madonna didn't really mean it. And she
But she said it.
Okay, well, what I'm going to say is to all of you, including our guest from the 314, which I never even got his name. What's your name, please?
Name's Pianchi.
Okay, Larry, thank you. You made a lot of sense tonight. I'm going to let the four alpha and beta males finish the show out. I'm at work. I'm putting myself on mute. Kim Jong-un, I give you a salute for making peace in the world. John, you're in charge of the show, and so is Don and Albert.
Yeah.
Okay, now
you.
I alienated the caller. He just hung up.
No, he thought he was finished. We're done. I enjoyed the conversation. It was lively and resolute, and so I think that we'll be meeting next week.
Don, I'll be calling you in the next few days to tell you about my summer plans. So, Albert and John, what's your conclusion?
Well, I'll go ahead and state, I hope that everyone loves each other, gives each other a hug. I hope that Donald Trump can hug all the celebrities. Hillary can hug me and Jane and everyone, and we'll all just get along.
Jesus.
If Rodney King's, you know, dig him up out of the ground, give him a hug too. It's like, you know, we can all get along. I just think that the as long as I have freedom to pursue what I need and you have freedom, I'm a happy camper. I hope those other countries get their freedom. I just don't think they're that happy because they have to smile. If you don't smile in North Korea, do what the government says, or same thing in under Sharia law, you have to dance to what the leadership says. So in America,
definitely,
this tonight, we don't dance to what our leaders say. We're saying whatever we want. And, you know, we have both sides here and speaking what we want. And no one's going to arrest me tonight. So I'm very happy. And I wish peace and love to everyone. And I hope you know God and go
Thank
to heaven.
You.
And we'll talk more in heaven.
I do have a conclusion, John Albert.
I have a conclusion, too.
Good, Albert. You can go second, and I'll go last.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Okay. My conclusion is no matter where you live, you're never completely safe from your government. And that includes every country in the world, right? No country is perfect. And, you know, no matter how much you say you love your country, you can say, oh, I love America, I love America. You're never completely safe from the government. I mean, there's even people that I heard from on Facebook talking about assassinating the president, and have gone, by the way, have the FBI have come over their houses and have taken them into custody and searched their houses. By the way, they do come over to their houses. So yes, if you do say you're going to assassinate the president, be aware of that, that the FBI will come over your house, because they have done that. But anyways, yeah. So, you know, no matter what country you live, you can't just say, I love my government and my country 100%, and they'll never do anything wrong to me. And then later on in the future, they do something wrong to you. So, you know, you can never be, you know, sure about that or completely sure about that. So just always keep, one eye open and open thoughtfulness, I guess. I can't find the words, but yeah.
I like what you said, Albert. My conclusion is that whether I live in America or in neutral Switzerland or in West Africa, every nation has a perspective and a history of the world. I believe that with North Korea and South Korea, they've pretty much been hemmed in by international agencies and bodies over a period of 67 years. There's not a lot of elbow room. And Kim Jong-un has measured himself to assert himself in kind of a rebellious manner to get the world's attention, when really I think what he really wants is the world's approval. there are risks within the international world on nuclear weapons and capability by all groups. And I think Albert's right in the sense that the Americans and the Europeans have taken the dominant course in trying to restrict and kind of guide the process of any country that they see is really renegade. And in some ways it's hindered us, and in many ways it's helped us. For example, Cuba, which basically had a philosophy that they stuck to that America didn't like, they didn't do harm to us, but they did harm to themselves possibly by having that type of philosophy and not developing different technologies. But, of course, by the embargoes, they were limited in, like, the manufacturing and car production, blah, 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 blah. Needless to say, the world is under – a lot of times we only see it from a U.S. perspective, but if you study the world or you go to different news agencies, there's different factors to consider, and we can't always consider countries good or bad, evil or good. The individual citizens residing within those countries rarely have a voice, and we don't really know what's going on in places like Yemen and Libya where there's civil wars and death every day. We're just not exposed to it. So we have to take things with a grain of salt and try to weigh it. With that, I'm pretty much done talking. Don, do you have anything to say? Well, I'm calling John's song. Oh, yes, Don?
No, I just wanted to tell everybody good night.
Okay, good night and happy Mother's Day. I'm cutting to John Yoder's song. Thank
happy
you.
Happy Mother's Day, Dave. Happy
All
Mother's
right,
Day.
Yep.
Happy Mother's Day.
Thanks. Happy Mother's Day to all living mothers.